I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC, and this is the news.
We seem to be in very good shape.
We can do so much better.
The final sprint, where the campaigns are spending the most time and the most money, with just 15 days to the vote.
The next 6 to 12 weeks are going to be the darkest of the entire pandemic.
Hospitals struggling, ICU beds running out in some places. Should we shift the treatment plan of COVID patients? A new consumer alert. Yelp now to offer a feature to call out businesses accused of racism. And the state of Hawaii. Tourists once again return to the islands after months of pandemic restrictions.
And good evening. Developing tonight, 15 days to the election, members of the same Russian intelligence agency that attacked the 2016 presidential campaign are now charged in connection with some of the most destructive cyber attacks to date around the world. A federal grand jury in Washington charging 6 Russian hackers in connection with crimes over the past 4 years. Today's charges include hacks that the feds say led to nearly $1 billion in losses for a healthcare system in Pennsylvania and 3 other U.S. companies, plus a blackout in Ukraine and computer problems at the 2018 Winter Olympics. NBC News Justice correspondent Pete Williams is with us. Pete, we knew Russian intelligence agents were involved, but now they've charged individuals.
Right, individuals that they've actually attributed these attacks to, and they say these Russians used some of the most damaging computer malware ever unleashed. The FBI says all 6 of them are intelligence officers in the Russian military who carried out these cyber attacks to support the Russian government's goals. And here's what they said. They say they did the following, starting in 2015. Knocked out electrical power in Ukraine during the winter, leaving 250,000 people shivering in the dark. Targeted the opening ceremony of the 2018 Winter Olympics and deleted data from thousands of computers that supported the games, which fouled up reservations and ticketing and made it seem like the attacks were coming from North Korea. Hit the U.S. by shutting down the computer system of a Pennsylvania hospital, making it difficult to get patient data, and targeting a FedEx subsidiary and a large U.S. pharmaceutical maker. Total losses, the FBI says, nearly $1 billion. The Russians were also accused of trying to interfere in the French elections in 2017 with hack and leak attacks and of hampering the UK's investigations into the poisoning of a Russian dissident and his daughter. Now, the Justice Department says these hackers are part of the same unit known in the cyber world as the Sandworm Team that was charged by Robert Mueller's prosecutors with trying to meddle in the U.S. election in 2016. As for Russian meddling in this year's election, John Demers, who's the Assistant Attorney General for National Security, says he's seen nothing to cause him to question what he's been saying, that a vote cast for a candidate will be counted for that candidate. Shepard?
Pete, it's one thing to charge them. It's another to find them and bring them to justice. Any chance of that?
No chance of that. Of course, these charges mean they can't travel internationally. And the government also says that these folks want to do something when they get out of the military. It makes it very hard for them to be ever hired by anybody that has any connection with a U.S. company.
Pete Williams in Washington, thanks. The vote now, and the final sprint is on, with Election Day 2 weeks from tomorrow. The candidates are on completely different paths toward the same goal. We're following the travel and the money. Right now, President Trump holding his second rally of the day in Arizona. He was in Prescott earlier. This is live in Tucson. Joe Biden off the campaign trail entirely. His campaign says preparing for the final presidential debate that's scheduled for this Thursday. Biden's running mate, Senator Kamala Harris, made a swing through battleground Florida with stops in Orlando and Jacksonville. She's rallying voters there on the first day of in-person voting in Florida. And here's a look where the candidates have been over the past few weeks. Biden and Harris have made a total of 24 campaign stops in 8 states, with most of them in Pennsylvania. That's how important it is to them. President Trump and Vice President Pence tallied 23 stops in 11 states, with their most in Florida. Without a win there, the president's road to re-election, says his campaign, is much tougher. And here's a look at how much the campaigns are spending on television ads in some key battlegrounds. See here? The top one is Florida, and they've dropped a lot of cash, with Vice President Biden outspending President Trump by close to $30 million. Earlier today, during a call with his campaign staff, President Trump admitted that he had doubts weeks ago about his chances of winning, But he says now he believes he'll win Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, despite trailing in the polls.
And this is all I'm telling you. We're going to win. I wouldn't have said that 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. I don't know. I wouldn't have said it. It was tougher for me. I'm going to Arizona today for two rallies. Those two rallies will put Arizona away.
Well, in that same call, the president attacked Dr. Anthony Fauci, called him a disaster, and other health officials idiots. Eamon Javers is live in Washington for us tonight. Eamon?
Yes, Shep, that's right. You know, the campaign today continued to be dominated by the coronavirus as both sides sought to place blame for the continuing case count here in the United States. On that call that you mentioned that the president had with his own campaign team, he did take the opportunity to bash Dr. Anthony Fauci. Here's what he said.
People are tired of hearing Fauci and all these idiots, these people that have gotten it wrong. Fauci's a nice guy. He's been here for 500 years. He called every one of them wrong.
Meanwhile, Joe Biden keeping a low profile, dialing back campaign activities as he prepares for the next debate coming up on Thursday. But late in the day, he did issue a response to Trump's comment saying, Mr. President, you're right about one thing. The American people are tired. They're tired of your lies about this virus. They're tired of watching more Americans die and more people lose their jobs because you refuse to take this pandemic seriously. So it's clear now that this race, as so much in American life, is now totally dominated by the coronavirus, Shep.
Trump campaign Eamon already criticizing the debate commission for a debate that hasn't even yet happened.
Yeah, they issued a letter today blasting the commission, calling into question the choice of topics for the debate coming up on Thursday. And Shep, we've already seen one debate blow up in a dispute over the format. We'll see whether that happens here. So far, both sides say they're going, but it's still only Monday, Shep.
Eamon Javers, thanks. Floridians hitting the polls today as early voting kicks off in parts of that state. These pictures coming up here from South Florida early this morning, or I think there they are. Crowds of people lined up in the rain to cast their ballots in person. Florida, a key swing state for President Trump and Joe Biden, with 29 electoral votes up for grabs. So far, more than 30 million Americans have already voted, either in person or by mail. For context, that's about 21% of all the votes cast back in 2016. That's new data from the U.S. Elections Project. Early voting also started today for North Dakotans. In Fargo, people wore masks and face shields as election workers cleaned voting booths and handed out forms from behind plexiglass. Like many other states across the country, COVID has been surging in North Dakota. Cases at an all-time high, and the virus putting more people in hospitals than ever before. That's according to data from the state's health department. NBC's Josh Letterman live in Bismarck. Josh?
In at least one voting location here in North Dakota, there were a couple hundred people lined up waiting to vote when the polls opened this morning. Now, it started in Fargo, and over the next week or so, early voting here will expand to other parts of the state. But one key quirk about North Dakota is the fact that you actually don't have voter registration here. Anybody who's an eligible voter can show up and cast their ballot, Shep.
You mentioned COVID there, Josh. All new highs for North Dakota, and they've been on the rise for a long time.
That's right. And now North Dakota leading the nation in terms of the rate of new COVID cases as well as deaths. At the hospital behind me, Sanford Medical Center, they only have one available staffed ICU bed left. But the issue of masks and COVID restrictions still very controversial here in North Dakota. Take a listen to what some public health officials and local residents told us today about the surge.
We have large events that are occurring in North Dakota. We have people that are going out eating, restaurants, bars, and people who are getting together socially, and they're just not taking the precautions that they need to take.
What do you think when you see people still not wearing masks, even as this is becoming such a problem here?
I think they're being pretty selfish.
Selfish?
Yeah, because they're just doing what they all, you know, want to do. They're not respecting anybody else.
There is no mandatory mask mandate here statewide, Shep, but in the last few minutes, the mayor of Fargo, North Dakota, announced he is putting a mask mandate in place. That mandate takes effect immediately, Shep.
That news late from Josh Letterman in Bismarck. COVID watch, states cases are up in states and regions all across our nation. America now averaging more than 56,000 positive tests per day over the last week. That's up more than 30% this month, according to Johns Hopkins. Hospitals and ICUs are filling up in some areas, both up close to 20% this month. Deaths have been relatively flat with improved treatment, but still, the numbers are painfully high. One state hit hard by the virus is Wisconsin. It added 30% of its total cases over the past 3 weeks. Hospitalizations tripled over the past month. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez is live for us tonight in Milwaukee. Gabe?
Hi there, Shep. Local authorities here are calling this a five-alarm fire. About 85% of the hospital beds in Wisconsin are full right now, and the state saw a record number of new COVID cases on Friday, more than 3,800. Now, behind me is a new drive-through testing site. Just a few moments ago, the last car went through, but, Shep, we had seen cars here for pretty much most of the day since it opened for the first time this morning, and this drive-through testing site is in the parking lot right across the street from Miller Park, the home of the Milwaukee Brewers. Demand for testing in this state has surged. The state has also opened a new emergency field hospital not far from here. Now, today, we spoke with several of the people in line at a distance. Here's what Frank Lockett had to tell us. Take a listen.
Well, I'll tell you what, they better wake up and get on board because it is, you know, this ain't no joke. It's killing people. All you gotta do is look at the numbers.
It's a little bit hard to hear there. Of course, we have to speak with him through speakerphone since he was experiencing symptoms. But his basic point is that he wanted people to take this seriously. Now, Shep, we should also say there was some breaking news today that a Wisconsin judge had ruled that the governor's order restricting capacity at bars and restaurants here to 25%. The judge ruled that that order could stay in place despite a lawsuit. But Shep, here is the intersection of politics and the pandemic. Early voting begins here in Wisconsin tomorrow.
Gabe Gutierrez on a cold night in Milwaukee. So where are we, big picture? And CNBC medical contributor and former DEA commissioner Scott Gottlieb is with us. Dr. Gottlieb, hearing dire predictions for the weeks ahead, what's yours?
We're facing a tough circumstance right now. We're going to see accelerating cases heading into the next 4 to 6 weeks, probably into the end of the year right now. It's going to be a difficult fall and winter. I think we're about 2 or 3 weeks behind Europe. So we're about a week away from starting to enter a period where we're going to see a rapid acceleration in cases. And I think November and December are going to be tough months. We're seeing hospitalizations go up in 42 states right now. Cases are going up in 45 states. And there really is no backstop. You know, the summer was a backstop of sorts to the spring surge. And we have no therapeutic backstop, and the season, the fall and winter season, is when this coronavirus is going to want to spread.
We were just live in North Dakota and Wisconsin, cold in both. That brings people indoors. Thanksgiving's ahead. What are you telling families who just haven't seen each other in so long and would love to have 10 people around a dining room table?
Yeah, when you talk to the governors about where they're seeing the outbreaks occur, when they do their tracing and they trace back to where the source of the infection was, oftentimes, it's family gatherings, it's gatherings at local social halls, Elks clubs, things like that. It's not people going into bars and restaurants per se. So I think we need to be careful in those settings where we let our guard down and we think that we're safe. And, you know, we're really coming to what I said this morning was the seventh inning of the acute phase of this pandemic. We've been through a lot right now. We've managed to protect the vulnerable in many cases. And I think we can't let our guard down right now. Thanksgiving is going to be a tempting occasion to bring together families. But if you have older individuals in the family, people who are vulnerable, I think you need to think about how to protect them through the holiday. As we get into 2021, the risk is going to start to recede. We'll have a vaccine for vulnerable populations, hopefully, heading into 2021. And, you know, we can look to happier days, but these are going to be some tough months ahead of us, and I think we can't let our guard down right now.
You mentioned a vaccine, hopefully. There's so much talk that it's just going to happen. You know, by the third quarter of next year, there's a vaccine. Can you handicap whether that's a real thing or not, whether you believe that's a real possibility?
Well, look, people are optimistic based on the early data, but we won't know until we unblind these large trials. I'm on the board of Pfizer, one of the companies doing a large-scale trial with one of the vaccines that's in advanced development. But remember, even if these trials are successful and these vaccines make it onto the market, they're authorized by FDA through an emergency use authorization. The first tranche of patients, the first group of patients who get that vaccine aren't going to have protective immunity into 2021. It's going to be probably February or March before they're fully immune or have the full benefits of the vaccine. Because even if the applications get filed at the end of November, which is the schedule right now when it could happen if the vaccine trials are successful, and the FDA takes 2 to 4 weeks to authorize those vaccines, it's going to take about a month to vaccinate that population, the initial population, which are going to be more vulnerable Americans. Then you have to wait about 3 to 4 weeks to get a second shot. Not everyone's going to get that exactly on time. And then after you get that second shot, then you have to wait about 2 weeks to have the full benefits of the immunity. So you're putting the schedule towards February or March when people will have the full benefit of the vaccine, even if it's on schedule, even if things go right and the authorizations happen sometime this year.
You wrote an op-ed that you referenced briefly there about getting treatments to people who need them, but obstacles that stand in the way of delivering.
Right. These are the antibody drugs. And so we always thought that the bridge to a vaccine could be these antibody drugs, the drugs that Governor Chris Christie and the president received. These are drugs that basically give you an immune system in a bottle. You're basically getting an infusion of the antibodies that your body would normally produce in response to the infection to fight the infection. I think these drugs should be available this year. They could be authorized by FDA in a matter of days or certainly weeks. But there's going to be real challenges distributing these drugs. Right now, the system the federal government has designed to distribute these drugs envisions infusing them in hospital emergency rooms. And these drugs need to be given to patients who are infected with coronavirus but aren't yet very sick. In many cases, they won't even be showing symptoms, but they're people who are at risk of having a bad outcome. It's going to be hard to get those individuals to come into a busy emergency room and sit for a three-hour infusion. Ooh. So I think the government needs to think about how to provide these drugs in a home-based setting, use home infusion services to give these drugs to people while they're in the home. The other challenge is you have to get the people to the hospital. So these are infected individuals that someone's going to have to drive them to the hospital.
Mighty complicated world. Dr. Gottlieb, thank you so much. We're dealing with COVID in so many different parts of life, right? Work, family, and for many, education.
The teachers are responding. It's been good. Everybody's trying.
Battling a pandemic and the destruction left behind from two hurricanes. We are on the ground with a town struggling to get their kids back to school. From chef to carpenter.
It just makes sense for me right now in order to survive in this pandemic.
The shift in careers that COVID is forcing many Americans to make. And about 30 million Americans have already voted. But when will those ballots be counted?
The facts. The truth. The news with Shepard Smith. Back in 60 seconds.
Yelp is taking a zero-tolerance approach to racism. It's out with a new feature on Yelp that flags businesses accused of egregious racist behavior. But can one bad review turn into a cascade of bad press? Here's CNBC's Contessa Brewer.
In small towns and big cities, Yelp reviews can make or break a business. But now the rating site will include not just complaints of bad food or bad service, it could also carry a warning label. This business accused of racist behavior. Yelp says since it launched earlier this month, only a couple of businesses out of millions have earned that warning. On the listing for Foster's Coach House in Rhinebeck, New York, photos of the interior posted by customers over the years capture the artwork that infuriated some customers and earned the restaurant one-star reviews going back years.
The first thing you see is this giant sculpture of a black man with oversized lips and bugged out eyes and really dark skin. Black and brown people would surely feel super uncomfortable and unable to enjoy a space with those sorts of things displayed on a wall.
But the complaints got headlines when they came from author and TV personality Torre after he ate there this summer.
Food is strong. The service is great. What the hell is that? And she's like, what? And I'm like, that statue is insanely racist.
Torre first tweeted the scathing critique to his more than 200,000 followers. And then he says he posted a comprehensive review on Yelp. So did his followers. Yelp didn't have the warnings of racism then, but a spokesperson tells us, at that time, our team placed an unusual activity alert on the page, which included language condemning racism until activity decreased. Foster's removed the artwork and told CNBC they agreed the art was symbolic of racism and depression and did not belong there. The owners say they're committed to providing an inclusive atmosphere and workplace. Foster's management has removed the antiquated and inappropriate Courier and Dives imagery and wall hanging from the restaurant. Foster's management strongly rebukes racism in any form. The current management truly regrets the inclusion of this imagery in the restaurant's environment and recognizes the decor put in place in the past has no place in today's world.
I think it was really what happened on Yelp that moved them to say, oh, wow, we need to make a change, because I think that's what restaurants really care most about.
CNBC decided not to include the full range of photos of that offensive artwork posted by customers online, but they're still on the Yelp listing for this restaurant. A Yelp spokesperson told me its priority is making sure that customers have all the information they need to make decisions about where to spend their money and whether they'll be safe and welcomed at a particular business shop.
Contessa, thanks. A man dangles from Trump Tower in Chicago for hours, and a shark attacks a dock worker in Florida in this CNBC trip coast to coast.
Florida. That thing attached to this man's foot? That's a shark. The victim says it grabbed onto him for more than 15 minutes. The man says he eventually pried the shark's jaw open with a hammer. He says he needed 16 stitches. California. Police arrest a man after an hours-long standoff outside Paramount Studios. Authorities say it went like this. The sexual assault suspect barricaded himself inside the lot. He pulled out a knife. One officer shot at him. And sometime during the standoff, he stabbed himself with that knife. Illinois. A man dangling from Trump Tower, Chicago for more than 13 hours. He suspended himself with a rope and harness from the 16th floor landing. Police say he threatened to jump unless he could speak with President Trump. They eventually got him down. Nobody hurt. Massachusetts. Lines out the door at Fenway Park this weekend. The Green Monster transformed into a voting venue.
It's always fun to be at Fenway in October, whether it's for the World Series or coming here to vote. It's great.
No danger of the former, doing well with the latter on this CNBC trip coast to coast.
When two major hurricanes hit Lake Charles, Louisiana, the landscape was ravaged, including the Calcasieu Parish School District and its 32,000 K through 12 students. After Hurricane Delta, there's not much left of their buildings or their infrastructure for remote learning. Here's CNBC's Scott Cohn.
The halls of LaGrange High School should be buzzing with students right now. In the school auditorium, they might be holding auditions for the spring musical. But Superintendent Carl Brookhaus says some parts of this building are a total loss.
Between the two hurricanes, all of our facilities had some damage.
That's 76 campuses in all. What Hurricane Laura started in August, just before the start of school, Hurricane Delta finished this month.
The debris companies were picking up the debris. Contractors were on roofs putting shingles on. And then you get hit by another hurricane.
District-wide, $300 million in damage and counting.
We can't forget that our students haven't been in school since March 13th. Because of COVID and then these hurricanes. We have to find a way to get our students back in our school buildings with our educators.
This is Principal Monica Thibodeau-Guillory's first school year at LaGrange. She says they had a plan for school in the pandemic, with most students on campus, but many opting to go virtual. Now they're regrouping.
There were a lot of things that we were going to start the year off doing. We're still going to modify those and get them going again so that we can get our students and staff all together again.
All easier said than done, with as many as one-third of the district's families displaced and others without power or internet. The high school is a focal point for donations and support. Tarika McClendon is a special ed teacher and the softball coach.
My role right now is to be a leader, to let them know that I care, that we care.
Remarkably, some schools in the district are set to reopen this week. At LaGrange, they hope to begin welcoming students back by the end of the month. But long-term, the situation is less clear. They're still waiting for word on a request for FEMA to cover 90% of the damage, which it often does in major disasters, versus the normal 75%.
We need FEMA to go to 90%. Otherwise, I don't know that we financially recover. And when your school district can't financially recover, that's not a good thing for your area.
The funding is based on a complex formula mandated by FEMA. A spokesperson for Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards says the administration is working with the White House to streamline the process. For this community that depends on schools like LaGrange, an answer can't come a moment too soon.
For the news, Scott Cohn, Lake Charles, Louisiana.
And we checked in with the mayor of Lake Charles this afternoon. Nick Hunter tells us that there are some bright spots. The power's back on, finally, and people can drink water from the tap again. We thought we have problems. Of course, returning to normal in all of Southwest Louisiana will take many years, or at least months. Itching to travel? Well, you can go back to Hawaii. A 14-day mandatory quarantine is over. But just how hard is it to follow all the state's new testing rules? We're live on the Big Island. And a new threat to watch out for when you're voting. Armed men who call themselves poll watchers? Coming up, our reporter follows one man as he tries to recruit people to help him protect the vote. CBS is preparing for the collision of COVID and flu. That's what's topping CNBC on the Money. The drugstore chain plans to immediately hire 15,000 workers, most of the new employees to be full and part-time licensed pharmacy techs. They'll give COVID tests and dispense medication. A bigger workforce could also help CVS prepare for the rollout of a COVID vaccine should one become available. You can now rent an entire theater from the country's largest movie theater chain, AMC, allowing private screenings for up to 20 people. The move designed to bring moviegoers back into the halls. Its business hit hard by the pandemic. Locations shuttered, major films delayed. The price to rent the place? Just $99. And Apple launching a 24/7 music video live stream. All music videos, all the time. Started today with a countdown of the top 100 most streamed songs. It's a flashback to MTV of the 80s, really. This service free to watch on Apple's existing entertainment apps. On Wall Street, the Dow down 410. The S&P and NASDAQ each down over a half a percent, over 1.5%. Traders selling as Congress does not appear anywhere close to a disaster relief bill. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. More than 30 million Americans have now already voted, but different states have different rules on when they can start counting the mail-in ballots. Florida started early. The governor gave the green light to begin processing mail ballots 30 days before the general, so we'll likely have a decision that night. Different story in Pennsylvania. They can't touch the ballots till the polls open on Election Day, and they're facing a massive backlog. There's breaking news out of Pennsylvania. Just moments ago, the Supreme Court ruled that Pennsylvania can count ballots up to 3 days after the election. That rejects a plea from Republicans there. The thing is, it'll take longer to count. So Pennsylvania will be delayed, but the chaos will likely be much less. And Michigan is another battleground state. It can start counting absentee ballots only 10 hours before Election Day. Election officials there say Michigan will likely be one of the last states to report full results, likely not until at least Friday after the Tuesday vote. There's a new concern now for law enforcement on Election Day. A number of police chiefs across the country tell NBC News they're worried about the threat of armed men at polling places. Lately at his rallies, President Trump has been calling for an army of poll watchers to monitor election sites. NBC's Dasha Burns live in Grand Rapids for us. Dasha, you've been following one local activist who wants to recruit others to, as he puts it, protect the vote.
Shep, we followed Adam Heikkilä to a Trump rally where he figured he would find some folks that are eager to participate as poll watchers and challengers. And he was right. He was a pretty popular figure with that crowd. And it was clear that the president's repeated calls to go to the polls and watch carefully are resonating deeply with his supporters. Many folks we met were pretty skeptical of the election system, and they wanted to take it upon themselves to try to ensure a safe election. Take a listen to some of what we heard.
We need to get people signed up locally. And when we get people that are outside of the system of political power that keeps them afraid, I feel truly that we're going to have people uncovering wrongdoing that has not been uncovered before.
I want to protect the integrity of our election, make sure there's no cheating going on potentially.
I'll just be watching to make sure that they're voting correctly, you know, that they're going through the process that they're supposed to be going through, and one vote, one person.
Shep, Michigan is an open carry state, but on Friday, state officials announced a ban on that at the polls. I asked some of the people we met about their take on that new ban, and many were gun owners, but said that they were not planning to bring firearms to the polls, but they were unhappy with the ban. They called it overreach on the part of the state government. Shep.
Dasha, thanks. The polls show President Trump trailing in the nationals. Pretty similar numbers to last cycle, really. He trailed Hillary Clinton on this date 4 years ago. Steve Kornacki digging into the numbers behind the race. Steve, a little deja vu there?
Really, Shep, truly. I mean, look at this. Right now, 8.9%. That's the average lead for Joe Biden over Donald Trump when you take a look at the national polls. Same exact day, 4 years ago. What did the polls look like then? It wasn't quite 8.9, but it was a 6.5-point lead nationally, Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. And this was the time, mid-October 2016, when Trump was hit with that Access Hollywood tape, and his numbers really did start to bottom out. But big lead for Biden then, and it was a pretty big lead for Hillary Clinton as well. Also, these are the battleground states now. This is what the battleground states looked like on that day in mid-October 2016. Now, the key was in the final 2 weeks of that campaign, Trump did cut the lead. The polling got closer in the end. The question now is, will there be similar momentum for Trump late in this campaign? Can he get the late push like he did in 2016?
This ruling we just got from the Supreme Court, Steve, regarding Pennsylvania mail-in ballots. This is a rejection of a Republican proposal and allows more time for people to get their ballots in. That could be a big difference maker in that state, couldn't it?
Yeah, and you're right, too, to focus on what that could mean just in terms of the timetable. Pennsylvania was already one of those states where we were saying it could take some time to get the results out there. But it's another variable here. We've been looking at the possible sort of factors that could complicate the picture. Another one in Pennsylvania was this. Voter registration statistics. These are net new voter registrations just in the last few months in three big battleground states. Pennsylvania, one of them, Florida, North Carolina. This is something Republicans have been talking about. Look at this. In the last couple months in these three states, on the net, they have registered more new voters, more voters than the Democrats in those three big swing states. That's something the Trump folks have been talking about. They've been saying they think they've got some folks who they can turn out who aren't being picked up on right now. This is the number they talk about. Of course, the Democrats, that court ruling, that gets to what they're looking for.
Yeah, a massive get out the vote operation on Trump's part. They've been talking about that for a long time. Is Joe Biden making inroads anywhere?
This is interesting, too. How about this? Let's compare what happened on Election Day 2016 with where the polls are now. Here's the biggest shift. Trump won the white vote. This is a huge group. 70% of the electorate is white. Trump won that by 17 points in 2016. On average now, Trump leads among white voters by just 4 points. Biden's gains have been among white voters. In fact, he's gained among white voters. Biden is actually not keeping pace. This is how Hillary Clinton did with black and Latino voters in 2016. Biden's not quite keeping pace. Biden's underperforming how Democrats have performed with non-white voters. Where Biden's made his gain here has been among white voters.
Very interesting. Steve Kornacki, Inside the Numbers. Thanks.
Thank you.
Are you in the market for a used vehicle? You're not alone. Pickups are especially popular right now. What some of you are willing to pay and how far you'll drive to pick up your pickup. And Paradise reopens. We are live on the big island of Hawaii to check in on the islands after COVID kept tourists away.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 90 seconds.
COVID watch, and for the first time since the pandemic, crushed travel here and really around the world. The TSA is reporting agents screened more than 1 million people in one day at U.S. airports this weekend. And for all of last week, more than 6 million. Travel is increasing. It's the best week since mid-March. Hawaii is now seeing an uptick in visitors since dropping its mandatory 14-day quarantine rule. You don't think you can just jump on a flight and head to the Big Island, though. CNBC's Jane Wells is there. She tried. How'd it go?
Well, I'm here. Look, Hawaii has to balance two things, a 12.5% unemployment rate and a 2.2 COVID positivity rate. And it is unique among the states. It has no borders. It can really control who comes in. And for the last 7 months, basically, nobody could come in here unless they were willing to stay at home for 2 weeks and not go outside. And believe me, they were hitting up violators big time thousands of dollars in fines. Even the Surgeon General got pinged. So here's the economic impact. Look at this. Back in January, they had on average 28,000 arrivals a day. That plunged to a little over 700 this summer. Then there was Thursday's reopening when over 10,000 people showed up. That was a huge snapback. Caught airport officials off guard. My little home videos don't really show the magnitude. So many people arrived who hadn't followed all the rules instituted beforehand. Officials became a little overwhelmed. Let me kind of walk you through an example of those rules. Look, if you come to Hawaii, you have to first go on the state website, fill out a form if you don't want to quarantine. You get this QR code. Then before you come here, you have to go get a Hawaii-approved COVID test at a Hawaii-sanctioned trusted site on the mainland before you can even come here. And that has to be done 72 hours before you land.
That sounds like a lot.
Yes.
How'd it go?
Well, it wasn't easy. By the way, you have to pay for that COVID test. We paid $128. And to find a trusted site, take a look. The closest one we could find was 80 miles away at a Walmart in Palmdale. And we didn't get the results until we were in the air when we landed on Saturday. So that was fun. Then when we land, you got to check out this video because my husband's in it. We came to the big line. Now, only this island, you have to get a second test, a rapid antigen test at the airport. He was a good sport about it. And you can't leave till you get a negative antigen test. If you're positive, you have to get another PCR test, and then you got to quarantine. Some people were taking hours to get out of here. For us, it was pretty good. But once you're out, Shep, if you look at my little driving videos, the island is wide open. The beaches are open. There isn't any traffic. You do notice the homeless more, and the police seem to be trying to get a handle on that starting yesterday. Many hotels, Shep, are not open yet. Some restaurants not fully open. But hey, it's Hawaii.
Yes, it is. What happened to all the people who got there on Thursday but didn't follow all the rules?
And also Friday. Yeah, there were a lot of people who didn't. The state was so overwhelmed, they started accepting any negative COVID test. It didn't have to be from a trusted partner. That waiver ends today. If you didn't have any of that and didn't have your little QR code, you were supposed to quarantine. But between you and me, I think a few people probably slipped through the cracks.
I bet they did. Aloha and mahalo for your cooperation, Jane. See you soon. Enjoy.
You bet. Aloha.
Places of worship turn to ash in South America. Plus a deadly bomb in Afghanistan as we go round the world in 80 seconds. Afghanistan, a suicide car bomb killing at least 13 people and injuring more than 100. The head of the hospital says he expects the death toll to rise. The explosion near government buildings in the country's western province. The attack comes as Taliban and Afghan leaders hold their first face-to-face peace talks in Qatar. Chile. Protests turned violent. Masked vandals set two churches on fire in Santiago. Video shows a spire burning to the ground. Cops fired tear gas and water cannons at the demonstrators. Church leaders calling for an end to the riots. This marks a year since the deadly demonstrations over inequality that rocked Chile. Hungary, a fancy meal on a theme park ride. For around $150 in Budapest, you can enjoy a four-course meal on the Ferris wheel. COVID forcing the Michelin-starred restaurant to rethink its business. The owner says it's a great way to keep social distancing while enjoying the views of the capital. Germany, this daredevil balancing his way to the record books. At 240 feet off the ground, Jens Deck walked on a thin rope in Nuremberg, setting a world record for the longest slackline walk over a stadium. He said the hardest part was keeping his concentration on this trip around the world in 80 seconds. Okay, imagine streaming Netflix and posting selfies on the gram from outer space. NASA and Nokia are teaming up to put a 4G network on the moon. It'll be part of the space agency's Artemis program. That's the mission scheduled to send the first woman to the moon by 2024. Nokia executives say the technology will help astronauts with voice and video communication. One small step for man and woman to establish a lunar base within this decade. The big build. Construction workers struggling to keep up with demand. One man saw the opportunity and cooked up a new career. How he went from chef to carpenter. And tracking a murder hornet. They're back. The race to find their nests and wipe them out before the creatures come up from hibernation and emerge to kill next spring. Time-lapse video coming here of the raging wildfire on the march in Boulder County, Colorado. Would you look at this? Plumes of smoke rolling in on Saturday afternoon, growing throughout the day. The Calwood Fire, as they call it, forcing more than 3,000 people to leave their homes. Excuse me, that's from the Boulder County Sheriff's Office. About an hour north of there, the Cameron Peak Fire is still burning. It's now spread to 318 square miles. That's larger than the size of New York City, from a fire that's been burning for more than 2 months. The nation's home builders are on a tear. They can't build houses fast enough as families crave more space now that so many of us are working and learning from home. But there's a problem. The builders need more workers. CNBC's Diana Olick with a story of a chef who, in the throes of COVID, decided to give building a try.
COVID hit Joshua Copeland and his profession hard. The 38-year-old chef recovered but was laid off from his restaurant job.
I kind of got put in a tight spot. I mean, unemployment was helping for a while.
But the government's extra benefits expired mid-summer, so Copeland needed a new plan. He saw an ad for the Colorado Home Building Academy.
If the construction industry is doing as well as it is, why not, you know, jump on that?
The Academy is a free training program backed by Colorado-based builder Oakwood Homes, a Berkshire Hathaway company.
We're getting more calls right now than we ever have.
Because high unemployment from COVID has workers looking for something safe.
This is maybe a job that's steady going forward. I can depend on it, and it's something I want to get into long term.
Demand for housing is soaring. Sales of newly built homes are outpacing construction at an unprecedented pace. Home builders are desperate for new labor, with the industry short about 57,000 workers, according to the NAHB. The Academy is planning to expand nationally, joining others like the Home Builders Institute, Youth Build USA, and the North Alabama Home Building Academy. Copeland finished his training last month and landed a job immediately at Taylor Morrison, one of the nation's largest home builders.
It's a huge breath of fresh air, honestly. Not having to worry about my bills anymore. It's a night and day difference from coming from an industry that, you know, right now is struggling to, you know, keep people hired, to an industry that's like, well, come on in, let's get you to work.
Copeland says he's now making more money as a builder than he did as a chef. And just to give you an idea of why builders are paying so much for workers like him, well, in August, the number of homes that were sold but hadn't actually been built yet was up nearly 70% from a year ago. And, Shep, that is a lot of work ahead.
I'll say, Diana Olick, thanks so much. With all the construction and all the movement from cities to suburbs and beyond, there's been a run on used trucks. Add to that, COVID shut down the new truck assembly lines, so in all of 2020's weirdness, pickups can be hard to find. CNBC's Phil LeBeau is here with one man's story. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Shep. You know, 1,500 miles across five states seems like a long ways to go, but that's what some people are willing to do for a used pickup truck. The market is so crazy. Last month, the jump in prices for used pickup trucks was the biggest since 1969.
They're the hottest rides on the lot. Used pickup trucks now selling for record prices.
It's as hot as I have ever seen it. Almost anything that has a pickup bed, even a rusty pickup bed, is popular right now.
So popular, buyers are paying about $5,000 more for a used pickup today than they were back in February, before the pandemic. What happened? COVID-19 forced auto plants to shut down, resulting in fewer new trucks. And as the pandemic dragged on, more Americans wanted their own vehicle to drive around. Those looking for a specific model are gladly going across the country to buy a truck. Just ask Chuck Schmidt from outside Spokane, Washington. He went to Kansas City for a 2017 Chevy Silverado.
At least two or three times a month, we have customers that come long way away. We sold a truck about 2 months ago to North Carolina. We sold a truck into Laredo, Texas. We're selling this one into Washington. So customers seem to be able to find things on the web more than they used to, and they'll come a long way to get what they want.
One more indication of just how hot the pickup market is right now. Dealers are saying that some used models are actually selling for more than new models. Of course, it depends on what that used model has. If it has unique features, It's going to be in high demand.
That is incredible. Phil, thanks so much. Murder hornets now. It's time. Scientists report they are concerned that murder hornets could wipe out the honeybee population in North America. So they've been trying to track them, you know, get in, find their nests. A recent effort went very poorly. Scientists in Washington say they used dental floss to attach a tracking device to one hornet's belly. But the giant orange and black winged creature flew faster than they could run, and they lost the signal. They say next time they'll use a lighter weight tracking device with a greater range and a longer battery life. Yeah, good idea. They have to work fast, too, because the murder hornets, they hibernate in the winter. They came from Asia. They're not supposed to be here. They don't have natural predators. They need to find them and destroy their nests before they go to ground for the winter and then pop up next spring to wreak havoc. The stage is now set for the World Series. It's Dodgers closing out Braves just a day after the Rays punched their ticket for the Fall Classic. And it wasn't just the players making the highlight reel this weekend. Did you see this, Game 6? We'll show you. Hang on. Did you catch any baseball over the weekend? What about Braves-Dodgers Game 6 of the NLCS? A fan in the upper deck, watch here, making a big league snag right there. Did you see that? Check it out in slow-mo. Here we go. No leather needed. Straight bare hand. Somebody needs to give that man a contract. He beat his buddy to the catch, and nobody spilled their beer. Call that a win-win. A highlight reel catch from the man in the Dallas Cowboys hoodie. So that was Game 6. Now to the one that really mattered, Game 7. L.A. clawing back into the series after going down 3-1. Cody Bellinger's solo shot in the 7th gave the Dodgers the lead, and they never looked back. 4-3 the final. L.A. now going for its first World Series title in more than three decades. But it won't be easy. They'll have to deal with the Tampa Bay Rays, fresh off a Game 7 win of their own. World Series gets underway on Tuesday night, and NBC's Morgan Chesky is live outside Globe Life Field in Arlington. Morgan, how are they preparing?
Yeah, this time tomorrow, we are going to be witnessing a World Series unlike anything we have seen before. It won't really change that much for the players who have been undergoing these COVID protocols now for some time since the playoffs began. But the fans can expect a significant difference right as they enter Globe Life Field. When they come up to that door, they're going to pull out their phone, scan a digital ticket, and then walk through doors that have been propped open to make sure nobody's having to grab that and pull it, eliminating any contact as much as they can. Then, no bags allowed on the inside. They want to eliminate any unnecessary bag checks. And then they're going to walk to these seats that have been sectioned off in areas of four seats in a row. All those other seats already zip-tied inside the stadium to necessitate social distancing. And from that vantage point, 11,500 fans will be able to watch Game 1. The Dodgers take on the Devil Rays and hopefully cheer on their team to victory. Now, when it comes time to grab that beer, grab that hot dog, they're going to find that all of the concessions are prepackaged and they have hand-washing stations everywhere. Cash is not allowed, Shep. And to allow for that, they've installed what they're calling reverse ATMs. You put in cash, you get a card out in return that you can use here at the field or anywhere for that matter. All of these things have MLB officials confident that they're going to be able to do as they did in the prior playoff series and pull off a potential thrilling series here where everyone can have a good time.
Morgan, thanks. 50 seconds on a race to the finish. The feds say the same Russian military spy unit that interfered in the 2016 U.S. presidential election is also to blame for some of the worst cyber attacks around the world, including malware that affected American companies and caused nearly $1 billion in damage. A grand jury indicted them today, and 15 days out from the election, Biden campaign is outspending the Trump campaign in a massive way in some battleground states, nearly $30 million more in Florida. And breaking moments ago, a big rule change for the final presidential debate on Thursday. The commission has just announced it will mute and cut off candidates' microphones if they interrupt their rival. And now, you know the news. For this Monday, October the 19th, 2020, I'm Shepard Smith at CNBC Global Headquarters. Shark Tank is next. Hang on. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.